Welcome to the stage, John.
Morning, everyone. Good to see some familiar faces here. Pleasure to be with you in what Michael and I were just saying, strange times. For most of us, probably this is the last time we'll be in a gathering of this size, I suspect, for some weeks to come. So enjoy the collegiality of it, because we'll all be at home for a while to come. Elliot and I were talking about our takeaways from today. We're keen for the best we can to offer some forms of inspiration and ideas, things that you can take away and work on. So I'm just going to nuance my piece to you a bit around some of the leadership challenges that we face, certainly that I have faced in this area, and some of my learnings, some of my failings, in the hope to stimulate some of your thinking about what we're going to do. Because one thing's absolutely certain in road safety is we are in a really ordinary place at the moment. The numbers have been relatively flat for some time. We know exactly what to do to stop people dying on the road. We're not trying to cure cancer here. We know exactly how they die and we know how to stop it, but we're not doing it. And therefore, it's a leadership problem, in part. And that is not someone else, that's us. Look, speaking of leadership, it's fantastic to have Fred in the country. I was lucky enough to be in Stockholm a few weeks ago at the Global Ministerial Council, and to see that generational impact that Fred and a very small other group of people have had in shaping the way in which we go about road safety today. So it's fantastic to have him there. The Global Ministerial Forum was in Sweden because the Swedish government, being really one of the global leading governments in this space, had offered to host it. Unfortunately, they hosted it in February, which is the most cold and miserable time you'd ever go to Sweden. They were boasting about how it was the mildest winter in 50 years in Stockholm, which meant every day was just simply dreadful. And as a result of that weather, most of the time you were trying to get out of the rain. In one particular space, I was able to get out of the rain by visiting the Nobel Prize Museum, because it's a Swedish institution. And I thought I would just go and have a look at a couple of heroes of mine. I have a love-hate relationship with economics. Economics is my background in training. I don't know a lot about road safety, and you'll soon find that out. But I am fascinated by a range of issues around economics and behaviour. So one of the most famous Nobel Prize winners of the last 20 or 30 years was John Nash. He was more famous because the book about his life, A Beautiful Mind, won the Pulitzer Prize, and then the film won the Academy Award with Russell Crowe playing the part in it in about 2001. He won the prize for economics, notwithstanding he was an extraordinary mathematician, and he subsequently won what's called the Abel Prize for maths, which is the equivalent of the Nobel Prize in Mathematics awarded by the Norwegian government in 2015. He and his wife went to Oslo to receive the award. They flew home to the United States. He lives at Princeton. They got off the plane at Newark and were travelling down the New Jersey Turnpike in the back of a taxi, not wearing a seatbelt. The driver lost control. They were both thrown out of the cab and died. And you know, the circumstances of Nash's death just seem particularly poignant to me, because as someone who's had the task of being a leader in road safety, one of the biggest challenges we face is that a lot of our ground over the last generation was made by a really big focus on individual accountability. In this state, you know, drink drive, bloody idiot, you can't get more focused on individual accountability. That, you know, road safety is because humans make wild errors. But in fact, one of the great minds of the 20th century made a simple error which thousands of people make every day, just not, for whatever reason, not putting on a seatbelt. I mean, the New Jersey Turnpike is one of the deadliest roads in North America. You know, it's a bit over 200 kilometres long and kills on average one person every 10 k's every year. It's 14 lanes wide. If you go on it, all you want to do is get off it. Right? But, you know, this notion that, you know, so much of what we've done over the generation is actually saying, you know, if you do something stupid, if you speed, you're on drugs, you're drunk, it's on you. And in fact, the work of Fred, as you would have heard earlier, and a small group of others, has been about trying to change that paradigm by saying, actually, we're all human. No matter whether you are the great genius of the 20th century or an ordinary person. And we all make mistakes, and we should run a system that accommodates that that era. So why is it that people, the community broadly, think that safety is largely about crazy and reckless acts? And that comes down in part to another very famous Nobel Prize winner in the early 2000s named Daniel Kahneman. You might have heard of Kahneman. He wrote a famous book called Thinking Fast and Slow. It can be a bit hard to get through, but the basic concepts of it were quite brilliant. Again, he won the Economics Prize and wasn't an economist, he was a psychologist. But one of the brilliant sort of concepts that Kahneman and his partner Tversky came up with was the notion of what they called the availability heuristic or availability bias. Essentially, we all make mental shortcuts that rely on immediate examples that come to our mind when we're evaluating a specific topic. So what we see written in the papers around road trauma is front page story about cars full of young kids drunken or on ice and doing crazy things, people evading police and crashing. Whereas if you're in a job like mine as the head of Vic Roads, every time someone dies, you get a one-page report from the Victorian Police Force within usually a couple of hours that gives you a snapshot of what happened. And yes, crazy acts, reckless acts, do account for 40 or 50% of what we see, but a significant proportion is just ordinary people who looked and didn't see. And the single biggest cause of or circumstance of fatality in Victoria, I think it's about 45%, and Michael might correct me, is single vehicles running off the road. Two-thirds of those vehicles run off a straight road. Now, some of them are drunk, some of them are asleep, some are on the phone, but they're just, you know, people making ordinary errors. And it was Kahneman who brought that. Prior to Kahneman coming along, we used to think that human judgment was based on humans being rational. And it's not true. We're not. And if you want evidence that we're not rational, go and run a roads agency for a few years and see what life's like in transport. I'm serious. So much that goes on in transportation is deeply irrational. Everything from the cars that we buy, the journeys that we take, the times that we travel, it's extraordinary, the things that we do that are emotional in nature, which we kid ourselves are thoughtful and rational in nature. So, and Stockholm really reinforced this. I mean, speaker after speaker would, you know, point out that in excess of 1.3 million people a year die in road trauma. That it is the single biggest killer of children and young adults up to 29 around the world. So our most precious resource, 250,000 children, small children, die each year, largely crossing the road to go to school. I mean, like the sort of moral argument for doing something different is so overwhelming, and yet we don't deal with it. And the practical case for doing something different is, I think, equally overwhelming. If you run a roads agency in Victoria, you know that Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, 600 people will go and sit a drive test, and two-thirds will pass. So we'll add 400 drivers a day to the network, 2,000 a week. And unlike almost any other part of the Western world, we will add a similar number of registered cars. And of course, older drivers are driving much longer. People often say, you know, what's going on with congestion? What the bloody hell do you think is going on with congestion? The place is growing by 120,000 people a year, and a significant proportion of those are students and migrants coming to our country as families, and the first thing you do when you get here is get a licence and get a car. Right? That is not in any model that you will find sustainable. They just can't keep doing that. I mean, the fact is, the growth numbers, you simply can't build enough roads and tunnels and framework. You've got to do something. You can't go cold turkey on the road system, but that's not a sustainable thing. It's not sustainable from a public health point of view. You know, we actually, you know, many speakers spoke in Stockholm about this extraordinary notion that we live in a generation where our children are likely to live shorter periods of time than us because of this lack of activity and all the consequent impacts on health and all the rest of it. We need more public transport, more walking, more cycling, more sharing, and they all have to be safer for that to happen. That's just a practical reality, and yet we don't. And yet we don't. So, What did I learn from that, given that I'm part of the problem having run an agency? My role was to lead an agency where the government had committed to get the road toll in Victoria down from around about, hovering around the mid 200s, 250, down to below 200 by 2020, and obviously we're not there. And in particular, I was fortunate enough to be leading an agency where about $1.5 billion was being invested by the TAC in infrastructure to make that happen. And that our strategy was very heavily based on something I'd never heard of, which was the safe system approach. So my perspective was really, as someone who came into it, I'm not a roads person, I'm a journeyman of running government agencies. I used to run the health and safety part of WorkSafe for a number of years. I ran the EPA for a number of years. My public service life is just really about trying to reduce seriously bad things from happening. And this was my opportunity to work in this space. And I thought that I would share with you some of the lessons that I learnt in that. And I'm not asking you to do the things that I did. It's purely just to sort of get you thinking about what you might be doing, what you might do. Stockholm was great, but not a lot of people said, this is what I am going to do. A lot of, naturally, by the nature of it, is this is what needs to be done. Right? So let me just try and focus on that. There's half a dozen of them. The numbers don't really matter. I haven't got a sense of priority, except for the first one. When you're in public life and in the field of harm reduction, where human behaviour is a factor, whether it's polluting or work-related death, the hardest thing to do is to take accountability for the result. And time and time again, I have seen that if you really want to make a difference in any of these areas, and this is the same, we have to take accountability. So as a road agency, we had to take accountability for what was happening on our roads. So while I was the chief executive of Vic Roads, 952 people died on the system that I ran. 25,154 people were hospitalised on my system. About 480 people suffered injuries from which they will never recover. Predominantly, they acquired brain injuries. About 100 will never walk again because their spines were damaged in that thing. You can see why people don't rush towards being accountable in this space, because it does you in, right? And particularly when you're getting every day the real story, the names, where they lived, you can paint a mental picture straight away of what went on. For me, the big turning point was in 2015. I'd been in the job for less than a year, and we were trying really hard as an organisation to embrace the safe system work. And we started to understand that actually we didn't really understand the implications of the safe system for a road agency. And it really hit home in the Australia Day weekend of 2015. On the Tuesday morning after the long weekend at about 6:30 a.m, four young fellas, they were in their early 20s, were in a Commodore driving back to Echuca from Melbourne. They had come down the night before, not crystal clear what they did, but part of what they did was to purchase some drugs, and subsequent tests showed that they'd used some of them. And about halfway back to Echuca, near Pylong on the Northern Highway, it would appear that the driver probably had the vehicle on cruise control at 100k, either fell asleep or whatever, and the road curved, but the car kept going, flat out, accelerating up the rise. As it crossed the road to the right, it clipped the end of a wire rope barrier that we had installed some years earlier. It became airborne, it hit a tree quite high up, roof first, and the young men all died, and they didn't die straight away either. It was one of those first times where we had both the opportunity and the responsibility to say, why did that wire rope barrier end there? Because if it had have been longer, we might have stopped this. Again, typical, so you've got a bunch of guys on the gear doing some crazy things. That's enough in some minds as to what happened. Turned out that we had installed that wire rope barrier, contemplating vehicles running off to left. In fact, we'd installed a lot of wire rope barrier, contemplating vehicles running off. Turns out a lot of vehicles run off to the right. In fact, more to the right, to the left. And it was just that really difficult conversation inside for the first time, and having the regional manager go to that scene and be there and start to explain what's gone on and how did what we do contribute to that. And I remember it was just the most painful thing. A couple of weeks later, we'd just finished the Labor Day weekend. On the Saturday morning of the Labor Day weekend, a couple were riding a Harley in mid-morning up the Great Alpine Road on the other side of Mount Hotham. A pretty typical thing to do on a long weekend in Victoria. The Great Alpine Road's full of couples on bikes doing a tour. And a fairly gentle bend, the bike has hit a shove, a bump in the asphalt, and bounced across the road by the look of it, and right into the path of an ongoing four-wheel drive, actually it was a police four-wheel drive, and the bike burst into flames and both of them died. And it was another difficult opportunity to say, well, why was that bump there? Had we recorded that bump? Why hadn't we fixed it? Turns out that shove was recorded by us as a road agency. It was deemed to be acceptable because the standard for bumps was based on cars, not motorbikes. And again, we had this dreadful opportunity to say, right, how have we, as the owners of the system, contributed? Because again, people would say, look, you know, the couple weren't young, people on Harleys on weekends, baby boomers, a huge issue out there, they crash all the time. When are people going to grow up? But the fact is, this is a busy road, popular with motorcycles, and we, as a system owner, I think should be expected to anticipate that sort of behaviour. So that was a Saturday morning. On the Monday afternoon, a woman was driving a four-wheel drive on the Golden Valley Highway just near Molesworth, and she had her three kids in the car, and she just ran off the road, and she died, and her 12-year-old died, and her two daughters were seriously injured. The subsequent inquiries would show that she was very tired. They'd been on a camping trip. She was just trying to get home. She, I think, had either called or texted her husband to say that she was falling asleep and was trying to push through, and it didn't work. They were the fifth and sixth people to die on that 10-kilometre section of road in 18 months. That road looks like any other bit of road, but the fact is it was another opportunity for us to take accountability for that and do something. And we took a decision that we would immediately drop the speed limit from 100 to 80, and that we would, through the TAC, fund a wire rope barrier down both sides and the middle. And we did that, and of course no one's been hurt there since, and plenty of people have run into that barrier too. So they were quite powerful lessons for us, I think, in this safe system journey that Fred goes on. It's, you know, it's a great theory, but no one, I felt there wasn't enough about what does this mean. I don't think there's anywhere near enough about what safe system means for vehicle manufacturers, and thank God we've got people out there who are pushing that, but because there's some terrible things that go on. So, you know, that was my experience of that. And I think I would urge you, in whatever you're doing, in whatever part, particularly if you're in local government or state government, to say, look, we own this problem. You know, it's exactly the same when you run a WorkSafe. It's all care and not enough accountability. And until you take accountability, not enough happens. And there's a simple reason why. If you say, we will be judged by the result, the first thing that happens is that your risk appetite changes. If you're not judged by the result, the decisions you make are remarkably cautious. Once you say, bloody hell, this is on us, you start saying, we'll try some things that might not work. And not enough stuff is tried here because we think we can only try things where we're guaranteed to succeed. And I can see one of my colleagues, John Gaffney, over talking about the work we did on the Monash and trying to stop truck and car accidents on the Monash and just trialling things and spending a lot of time working with the community to say, we're just trying this, we're not sure what's going to work, but the consequences are so bad, it's worth having a crack. So that's the first area, is that accountability. The second lesson to me is around what I broadly call purpose and connection. As the head of a road agency, I was much more likely to be criticised for what I was doing about road safety than I would for not doing enough about road safety. So if I go on talk back radio and talk about speed or bike lanes or road space allocation or whatever, the switchboard would melt. But I don't recall anyone ever ringing in and saying, you bastards are not doing enough. But yeah, they're in about maintenance and, you know, the potholes are shaking our trucks to bits and all that sort of stuff. But it did surprise me that I didn't feel under that much pressure. Sometimes, you know, if there were a number of schools along a street, you'd cop a hammering from those people. Sometimes you'd get pressure from a councillor, particularly from Jackie, from Yarra, around 30Ks and those sorts of issues. Sometimes you might get pressure from cycling bodies for more separation, sometimes from walking groups. You'd get huge pressure if you want to cut down a tree on the side of a road. Like, massive pressure about, and again, that spiritual connection is so strong in communities. Like a tree would cause, you know, extraordinary, let alone cut down a lot of kilometres. I'm not being critical, because spiritual connection matters, but there's a greater spiritual connection to the tree than there was to life and limb, was my experience. And I'd often say to the staff, why am I being criticised on talkback radio or on the tabloids for trying to save people? Now, there's no answer to that, except there's no point fussing about it. The fact is that we have had periods in this state where there has been extraordinary community mobilisation around reducing road trauma, and there's not now. And one of the big issues that came out of the Stockholm discussion is that whilst the recommendations to governments, which hopefully will be a UN General Assembly resolution, were around safe system with the addition of issues around technology, the big issues around sustainability and reporting and procurement. We need to find those other issues which the community is really passionate about and tuck ours under it. And other speakers today will talk a bit about lifestyles and amenity and pollution and particulates, which are really big issues in communities, and somehow find ways, because for whatever reason at the moment, this one doesn't get the traction it needs to make the changes that we need. That was my experience of it. And I ran WorkSafe at a time when we introduced a massive marketing campaign that you might recall, which was Little Boy Waiting for His Dad to Come Home, which had the byline, "The most important reason for being safe at work isn't at work at all." Right. Well, we never got going until that campaign, and then we were flying from that point. We were absolutely flying. And within VicRoads, we were a road organisation, but our mission was to make people's lives better by giving them journeys that were safe and reliable and efficient. We actually found ourselves to be a really full-on public transport organisation because that was consistent with our mission. And people would often, you know, be cynical about that, but I'm telling you, we were really passionate about public transport for that very reason. So that's the second one, this notion of purpose and connection. It's the same in all forms of harm minimisation. You can't just assume that what matters to us matters to the community. I did not find that to be true. The third issue for me is what I just broadly call saying yes to things, and it's consistent with some of the issues that we touched on. Within a broad agency like a VicRoads, there are some teams, usually, you know, in regions, who are incredibly passionate about road safety, and I found you just got to let them go. Or you can't. There is a temptation as a conservative older organisation. Am I doing? Oh, that's hitting that. Thanks, Elliot. There's a temptation, because we are 100 years old and big engineering and have lots of standards, to put, you know, to really be quite entrapped by those standards. And to the extent that there are some people who say, can we just try this? You've just got to say yes to it. And one of my favourite examples we had an incredibly passionate team down at Gippsland who are custodians of the Princess Highway down there, which is, you know, technically speaking, a bastard of a road in terms of road trauma over the journey. And there are some sections of it. There was a particular section down towards Lake's Entrance where the road winds up through the hills and it's quite visual and challenging and then goes and flattens out. And all the trauma was on the flat. And the basic assumption is that drivers concentrate through the hills and relax on the flat. And sure enough, they were relaxing and running off. And the team were beside themselves. We didn't have the revenue to divide the road. We couldn't do a 2+1 at that stage. And, you know, they came up with this idea of simply painting the guard posts different colours and putting them at different intervals to try and trick the brain to back into saying what's going on and concentrating. And of course, every specification says you can't do that, and they did that, and of course it had actually some material effect. But even if it hadn't, what harm was done what cost of it. And so a lot of work was done, you know, just in non-standard intersection treatments, things that are cheap and cheerful, bit of paint, bit of this. It's just, you've just got to be much, as a fraternity around road safety. And I know you would desperately say, well, we'd love to, but we haven't, but just got to push it harder on saying yes to things. And then working with the community to say, look, you know, we're not certain this is going to work, but we won't know until we try, and we'll fail really fast at it. So if it's not working, we'll change it. I often tell a story about one of the, you know, the most contentious bits of work we did was Francis Street in Yarraville, because it's the route for all the containers to go to the port, to the container yards. There are four schools on Francis Street, Yarraville, and a rapidly changing community over the last probably 20 years now. And they've done everything from blockade the road to run protests and petitions to try and get the trucks off the road. And at one particular forum, we were beside ourselves what to do, and we simply bought the truck operators and the residents together. They'd been campaigning for 20 years and never met, which tells you something. And after a couple of hours of really tense and difficult discussions, at one point, one of the mothers, just in sheer exasperation, said, look, for God's sake, all I want to do is, when I drop my child off to school in the morning and get out of the car, I just don't want to have to feel as though I'm going to be hit by a truck. Is that too much to ask? And to which one of the truck operators said, well, actually, our trucks shouldn't be on that road at that time. That's an inefficient time. Why would we be, you know, moving a container at 8:30 in the morning? So someone said, well, what do you mean you'd gladly stop it? He said, yeah, it shouldn't be happening. So someone said, well, okay, so we just ban trucks at 8:30 in the morning, and then 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be okay with you, and that would be, yep, that'd be great. That's what we did. And 6 months later, we came back and said, well, what happened? And the mother was there and said, what's been the result? She goes, it was life-changing. Life-changing. I mean, it's just ridiculous, some of the things that sit there, and, you know, literally at our feet, that we can try. But as big institutions, we're all too clever, and it's all, oh, you can't do this, this might go wrong, what might go wrong? And I did find, as a leader, and I'm not saying I was good at it, because I was part of the problem, but I did find that a big issue. The fourth one for me is what I would just broadly call, that lesson for me, was this need to connect and respect and nudge. When we dropped the speed limit on the Golden Valley Highway at Molesworth, to 80k, that was incredibly unpopular because, number one, the locals simply had no line of sight of the fatality record on that road, which struck me as bizarre, given that we all knew about it, but anyway, and they thought that they were visitors, and they weren't, they were locals, so it just seemed really odd. But what really happened was that that road is the road to Mount Buller, and the opening of the ski season is, I think, the second weekend of July, the Queen's Birthday weekend, so between this weekend and then, we'd done the work and dropped the speed. And as a Victoria Police are fantastic, and they're really zealous up there, but unfortunately they thought that would be a good idea to get the cameras out on that Friday night as thousands of people are running up there with this new speed limit and harvest the fines. So what became, you know, a hard enough issue to sell suddenly became a revenue-raising thing, and we were cooked in that town. And it just struck me that we're sometimes just not respectful about people when we make these changes. You know, we desperately need them to support what we do, but we just don't take the basic step. It would have been a golden time to issue a warning letter or to say you've been nabbed, we've changed, now get on with it, have a good weekend. That would have been, but sometimes we can just be so overzealous or so restrictive in what we do. You know, my view is if you put a speed camera in place for the first few weeks, you should get a letter saying it's there if you're caught, and say it's just a warning. And that letter should say, this section of road has had this trauma experience over the last 5 years. We have been logging average speeds on this section of road. This is what it is, and you were doing that, and as a result, we're setting it there. If you do it again after this date, you'll be nicked, and by the way, we're keeping a record of this letter. That's all you get. People say, oh, fair enough. And then, actually, in a nudge theory, you'd say 90% of people travel at this speed, you were over it. We know that works. We just don't do enough in that thing. And we don't use basic nudge theory. Every 6 months, the traffic camera office will publish all the cameras and the revenue that they collect. And there's always a top two or three which the Herald Sun will scream about. It used to be Warrigal Road and Holmesland, now it's at Latrobe Street and King Street. And what have I got? Two? Righto, I'll crack on. Now, if the same section of road continues to harvest fines month after month after year after year, there is a point where that is the responsibility of the road operator. Because we're doing so, because people are obviously, we know from Daniel Kahneman's Nobel Prize, we know that driving is what he would call a level system one thinking thing. In other words, you're not fully engaged as you do it. Your mind is sensing what is the appropriate speed. In those areas, you sense at 60, but the speed limit's 40. There are, I think, 11 speed signs leading into that speed camera at Holmesbury. Like, it's like a Christmas tree. I mean, it could not possibly, if you were engaged, not notice it, and yet it continues to harvest these fines. So, again, you'll see now it's got better road markings, and a lot of work is being done around towns to try those things, to use the known nudge theories to trick the mind into thinking this is a different speed and different things. I'll wind up on two points. There's not enough diversity of thought that comes. There are some fantastic experts, and you're all part of it, but actually you do need different life experiences, breadth of gender, people who live in city and country, inner and growth areas, and a whole lot more. We are trying to affect and change people's lives, and we rarely, at a high level, have an appreciation of those lives. And you need more of it. And my last piece is really simply that we learn, I think, to celebrate more. Because road safety is like most areas of harm reduction, success is measured in degrees of failure. It's no way to campaign and improve, I can tell you. Right? It doesn't matter if it's work safe or the EPA. Last year was a shocking year for the road toll in Victoria. The year before was spectacular. We found it very difficult, I think, to really celebrate the spectacular year. Every time we'd say it's the lowest toll on record, there wouldn't even be a breath before we said, but of course it's too high and it's dreadful. Can we just say this was fantastic? What happened? Well done to those who changed, and try and build some momentum around it. Every small bit of success is something to build on. And my experience was you've got to celebrate more. So look, none of those things are me telling you what to do. They were my half a dozen lessons that, as a leader who, you know, failed in plenty of these things. You've got to be, look, if you're serious, you've got to accept your own accountability and what we're doing if you're in our business. Be a lot smarter around purpose and connection. Just because it all feels morally strong to us, I'm telling you, there's a bit more to life than that. Have the guts to say yes was a big thing for me. Actually, never, ever drop your guard on being respectful and connecting with people and using the known ways of nudging people. If you know, as a harm reduction person, there are four levers you pull. Right, number one is you educate people and say it's really bad for you. Number two, you persuade them. You run emotional campaigns and say it's all really terrible. Number three is you offer some sort of incentive for them. You know, if you do the right thing, you'll benefit. And number four is you punish them. Consequence. Consequence is generally the most powerful lever. If you ask Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner, he'd say, well, actually, the first one should be your number five, which is you make the desired behaviour the easiest behaviour. And we don't do anything like enough of that. Get some diversity and celebrate more. Thanks very much for listening to today.